truth.
Live. Blog Talk Radio.
Raising the taboo. Getting honest about class and classism in higher education. Stay tuned.
Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The Supreme Court is seeing the most significant abortion case before the High Court in decades. The Mississippi law bans nearly all abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. In oral arguments today, Mississippi Solicitor General Scott Stewart claimed the landmark ruling in Roe v. Wade has produced decades of damage in the U.S. He says abortion is a political battle. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor cited longstanding precedent for legal abortion in the U.S.
The right of a woman to choose, the right of to control her own body, has been clearly set for since Casey and never challenged.
The Texas High School is on lockdown after reports of an armed person on campus. This is at Aikens Early College High School in Austin. The Austin Independent School District Police said it was investigating. There's a heavy police presence at the school. Stocks are rallying today after a wild last few trading sessions. December trading is off to a positive note with the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 400 points at times. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 are in the green as well so far today. Mortgage applications were mixed last week as interest rates jumped. The national average interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rose 7 basis points. Last week's bump caused refinance applications to crater, falling 15% for the week. The anti-vaccine founder of the first Alabama Christian TV station has died of coronavirus. Marcus Lamb started WMCF-TV in Montgomery in 1985 and died yesterday at the age of 64. His current network, Daystar Television Network, has featured vaccine skeptics and programming with doctors who support alternative COVID treatments. Lamb was hospitalized with the virus in mid-November. Motley Crue has sold its entire recording catalog to the BMG Music Company. Sources tell Variety the deal is worth about $150 million and includes every album in the band's 40-year career. It has 7 platinum albums and has sold over 100 million records worldwide. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Donico Pet Clinic provides comprehensive care for the animals of people in need. Funded by donations and powered by volunteers, Donico Pet Clinic keeps overhead to a minimum to ensure healing is at a maximum.
Hi, this is Marty. Please help Team Donico make a difference in the lives of pets and their people. Volunteer or donate today. Donico Pet Clinic. Log on to donico.org. That's donecoe.org.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather. Outlook for Wednesday, we'll see mostly cloudy skies and rain at times today. High temperatures now 56, 57 degrees. We'll also have a little bit of wind out of the south to southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusting up to 30 in selected areas. For tonight, rain likely, low temperatures dropping down to about 46. For Thursday, starting things out with clouds and rain, moving to partly sunny skies by Thursday afternoon. High temperatures around 49. Thursday night, though, mostly cloudy skies, lows back down to about 38. Friday, mostly cloudy skies and a few sun breaks. Highs of around 45.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy O'Bear, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelt and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
So welcome to Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear. I could not be more excited to have Dr. Becky Martinez of Infinity Consulting with me. Thank you, Becky, so much for joining.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be in this conversation with you.
Me too, and I noticed I was doing this because we talk about race. I'm much more grounded, centered. I've done much more work on my internalized dominance around race as a white person, white privilege, classism. I've done some, but growing up middle class, professional class, I've not done anywhere near the work. So I'm breathing a lot, and I invite you listeners to breathe. We're talking about engaging the taboo, getting honest about class and classism in higher education and possibly beyond. Because Dr. Martinez, you've not only worked in higher ed, that's when I first met you, 2002, we're coming up on our 20-year anniversary.
No.
You were in student affairs, and I've known you in your full-time equity work as a consultant, trainer, coach, author of Straddling Class in the Academy. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
And then I think there's some articles. I know we've co-done some article work. So I've just been following you, and I get to work with you as faculty at the Social Justice Training Institute a couple times a year. So I've learned with you, watched you 2 decades. Jeez Louise.
I know, right?
I'm just so grateful for your work in the world to help organizations change, leaders change, and to really, as you talked in your bio, hold the both and. And so if you don't mind, just letting the listeners know a bit more about you and maybe how you came to have class and classism so central to currently your work in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would add, in addition to us knowing each other for 20 years in those professional capacities, that you're also my friend and mentor. And I think that that's what gets forgotten, right, is that we go, I'm reworking my bio so that I started out in a who I am in my humanity space and not what I do. And I think that that's a class reframe. So as you were doing that, I was like, I'm your friend, and you're like, you're my mentor too. So I don't want us to forget that. So I'm Dr. Becky Martinez, she and hers, and I'm in Southern California, which has all of its sometimes class implications. I love ice cream and running, and I'm a proud aunt, and I'm a fiercely loyal friend, sometimes to the detriment. And I used to work in higher ed, and that's where I grew up. I often say that's how I grew up, especially as a first-generation college student who grew up working class, who wanted to be a doctor because that's what you're supposed to do when you don't know any differently. And how I became so grounded in this particular area of inclusion, which is only talked about a little bit, is actually at SJTI 2. It was SJTI 2 or the renewal. I think we called it SJTI 2 at that time. And we were working we had the opportunity to get into a dominant group and a privileged group, or a dominant group and a subordinated group. And I think I chose the dominant group, and there were 2 other people in it. And like we talked, it's interesting because we all have a similar background. And that is what we talked in about with class and this straddling space. Although I don't think I had a name, or we had a name for it at that time. And I was in deep pain for that entire conversation, which tears aren't new in any place that I go. But it was this, like, guilt and shame of coming from a working class background and the shame that I felt about that. And then the guilt and shame that I felt as a middle class person. And how to, like, rectify that in my spirit and how I treated people and what I think of them. So that is my entry point in this conversation and in this work. And since then, it's just become something that sits deeply in my soul because I think we don't talk about it to, like, authentic ways.
Mm-hmm. You're taking me back to probably a SJTI renewal before that, because we had a 5 or 6 people in the dominant group on class. And I felt guilt and shame because I was one of the few people there who grew up in class privilege, middle professional class, and now I call myself more upper middle class. And to see how many folks in higher ed, probably nonprofits, as well as maybe even K-12, I wonder how many folks also might be class straddlers now. And fewer folk maybe like me, where I've had class privilege all my life, didn't have to think about it. Thought it was only about money, how much money you had. And I looked up the hill where the people that were the doctors and lawyers, and then I felt less than because we were only middle class. My mom made my clothes. I was embarrassed because I was also much heavier at the time, and we didn't have money to buy me clothes. So I was looking at what I didn't have, not all that we have. And that gets me to what is class? Because I sure still don't have a great understanding of it.
What I really love about your story, and one of my favorite questions, and you know I love to ask them, is like, what's your class story? Because we get into the complexities of that. As I, you know, hear you, there's the reference groups that you're talking about. So, you know, up the hill, this is how I got my clothing, how I felt, and that was in reference or comparison to another group. And that's sometimes how we work class. So we may not know any differently until there is something different. And so as, you know, as we engage in kind of what classes or social class identity, particularly because, you know, language changes and terms are fluid, we've added social class to there, although I use class more often because it's easier and that's where people go, is like various forms of capital. So it's not just about money and assets and what you have and what you can see. And like, that's important. That's important to pay attention to, right? What is your bank account? Do you own a home? Do you have debt? Can you buy food? Can you buy clothes? So like the financial piece of capital, which is where most people enter the conversation around class. And, you know, it's like social capital, cultural capital, academic capital, language capital, and how all those different forms of capital manifest itself out. So there's like shame and guilt because of what's interesting how class looks itself out is, you know, folks that grew up probably middle class plus, and I always say plus because, you know, upper middle class, wealthy, rich, owning class, and that's like those last three terms are in its own category, but can feel like guilt and shame. And then on the other spectrum, people who grew up with like working class or poor, feel guilt and shame. So there's like these similar feelings, but we don't talk about them, which is, I think, pieces of the other pieces of capital that exist. So social capital, it is, you know, who you know, networking, connections, cultural capital is what you know. So the information that you have in a particularly an academic setting or in the academy, with those two forms of capital that you want to know, like information around systems, schools, what holds names. You know, I probably wouldn't be here if I didn't know you and I was connected to SJTI and we got to work together. So like the social and the cultural capital that comes even in our relationships. And then you have the academic capital. So those three forms of capital are the ones that at least in academia we started talking about. And that was where those worked on financial, social, and cultural capital. And since then it's been expanded. And so think of linguistic capital, like how we talk, what accent folks use. Can I say both and that's okay? And it's not tagged as unprofessional. We can unpack unprofessional and professional. And then you have, you know, academic capital, so where you got degrees and what those degrees are in, and how many of them do you have, and do you have an EBA or a PhD or just a master's, which I hear often in the academy. So there's so many forms of capital that just talking about it in an economic and financial sphere of disservice. And then there's that, so how do we feel around that? You know, I love to sit in my heart. And it's like, how does that land on folks? And how do we feel around having more or less or not knowing? And that's like a place that a lot of people don't want to or are protected in their spirits to not go.
Thank you. And as I hear you, the class and the race overlay are screaming at me, especially in the academy. And I remember growing up, and I did go, took one class at a community college when I was a senior in high school, but I was kind of like, look at me, I'm so good. I never would have considered going to community college because the classist and racist beliefs that I had oh, low-income, people of color go there, I'm going to a four-year private liberal arts. And so I always believed that if you had class privilege, you were smarter, better. If you didn't, you had to pull yourself by the bootstraps. And I wonder how much of those classist attitudes are still prevailing and contributing why I believe, like you in the higher ed, I'm usually one of the first to bring up class, unless it's someone by hierarchy that's experiencing oppression and classism, staff, entry level. But to actually talk about elitism and classism and faculty, the degrees, I have an EDD that's not valued like a PhD. So it's just these gradations. So what do you think is still happening in 2001? Or what are we, 2021? 21. I don't want to be as old as I am. I'm half joking, but not really. What do you think? Why do we not talk about class? Why? What are the barriers we create and the systemic dynamics that keep us from having authentic, engaged, disrupting conversations about class and classism?
Particularly in the academy, right? I'll start there in the academy. So even calling it the academy, people have been like, the academy sounds so so class. And I was like, what is? I imagine there's several reasons we resist or ignore or don't want to talk about it. Our institutions, at least most of them, were founded in a very elitist and classist space. So, I mean, it's the same, it's not the same, but there are similar themes around why we don't want to talk about whiteness in academia. It's a system that was set up, right, by and for people who had at least an amount of wealth. Until we developed other institutions like community colleges, right? If we think of education in a particular or in broad base, like trade schools, but in these, we'll say in the construct of a four-year institution, like, yeah, it was founded on being better than. So why do we want to talk about founded on being better than? And we carry this badge of class around, you know, if it's an Ivy League school or if it carries emphasis to it, or if it has name recognition or if it has more social and cultural capital than other institutions. So why would an institution want to talk about class in ways that is damaging a reputation, or they have to shift the way that they think or engage in it, or they have to look at the tenure, like the very class tenure process? And, you know, the inequity of pay of faculty, staff, administrators, where people park, what their practices are, what spirit days are like all of those things. So it's heavy and it's a lot and it's a mirror and people get nervous. I think that's the other piece is that, like, people get nervous talking about it because when you talk about what you have or what you don't have, and then it becomes a really personal. And it is so, as I said, it's so intertwined with various identities. And so the first place that we go to is race, and understandably so, but also how is class, like, wrapped up in sexuality and disability, which, you know, we don't talk about disability only in, you know, like, what's accessible. So it, like, it's really tangled. And I think similarly to how you all taught me around SJTI to pull the thread around race so we can clearly see how it shows up, we also have got to be able to pull the thread around class to see how it clearly shows up. And that gets really difficult for, I think, folks that identify migrant BIPOC folks, right, who now have this middle-class space. Because it's like, oh, that's a privileged space, and it's intersecting, and it's messy. And when I hear the word professional, like, I always, like, perk up. And so many people have that themed around race, and that's such a class term. So even nowadays, I say blue-collar professional. I don't say just blue-collar. Because they are folks that are blue collar are professionals,
And I've been naming myself as a first-generation white-collar professional because it just broadens, and people have been like, oh, me too, that's a name. But, like, let's reframe professional so that it is at least as classed as all that's professional, and that's valuable.
Yeah, working with your hands, that's dirty, that's less than, that's immigrant. I mean, there's so many of these different marginalized identities that seem so intertwined over the centuries. You may have intentionally gotten quiet when you started talking about secrets, but your voice got much quieter when you said people don't want to talk about it. They feel uncomfortable. So,
oh, thanks for the feedback.
Well, I want to go there. We have, you know, maybe 5-ish minutes before the break. Could you say more about what the secrets are about, that shame, that guilt? Because you have so much about you that's about healing and liberation, and I want to come back to that after the break. Why do we individually, particularly in our marginalized identities, have that shame and guilt because of our class backgrounds?
Well, we have been socialized not to talk about class. And so, you know, the things that you don't talk about are politics, religion, and class. And so there's the direct messaging that you don't talk about it. And what's fascinating about that is we talk about it all the time. We just have coded language. And it's like, you know, have you taken a vacation? How did you spend your weekend? I'm going to go grab a coffee, right? Do you want one also? You know, what did you pack for lunch? What language do we use to describe? So we always talk about class, but we don't, there's no consciousness, or there's rarely consciousness around how we talk about class. And that's what, like, that's for me, like, the beauty of it is there's this language, even the words like nice or fancy.
Good neighborhood.
Right, good neighborhood. I went to a fancy dinner. Right? I drive a nice car. They have raggedy clothes. So class. And I think that's the, I don't know if it's the tension or the dissonance that exists in that. And then people want to talk about it because they're going to talk about what folks have and don't have and what they have access to or not. So it's so very completely clear. Whereas like, oh, okay. Like, who has access to what? Who can get what? Who has believed, like, all of those pieces can be passed.
So I was thinking about elite colleges, elite independent K-12 schools will probably say, we're disrupting classism by, you know, 30% of our monies are going to people who are low income, and yet they're not changing the culture, the climate, and look how we're helping you. And that we're so good, that philanthropic classist charity is still in me. And the other side of that, I think, is because I think of why middle, upper middle plus class folks don't want to talk about how much we have, because then someone would say, well, how are you using your resources? Why do you keep so much? And so that fear of losing, which I think is the same of white folks and white privilege, if we really dismantle racism, we won't be able to have all that we have. Whew, we're going to be going to break soon. Any other final reflections? And I'd love you to let folks know where they can find you if they want to keep talking or have you come to their organization.
So I'll give that information and then we'll see. So it's infinitymartinez.com. That's my website, but it's at Dr. Becky Martinez. That's my Twitter. That is my Instagram. My email is BeckyMartinez1@gmail.com. Well, it's the number one, not spelled out one. So those are my contact ways. And there's so much that you just said there.
Keep going, and then you got a few minutes.
Yeah, as a there's just this guilt and shame, and how do we work through that? I think in our dominant identities, but as we see it in play out, and while we give students money, right, or people have a particular salary, that's where folks accept us in that economic capital, and so we've created equity through giving you enough money. And institutions have started doing that. I think it was Opportunity Vanderbilt was the first institution that gave, if you had that financial aid, 4 years of tuition paid. And that doesn't make students feel comfortable or part of or supported. So let's give you this money, and which is awesome. So like to not be in the student debt is great. And how are we creating resources so that students can talk about what their experience is or what they're struggling with? And it's not just students. It's also staff and faculty that come from working class and poor backgrounds, because they're going into a system that they've known because they have a degree or two or three, but there's the assumption that they have a working class, they have a middle class plus origin. That's a myth in higher ed. If you work in higher ed, you come from at least middle class and have to absorb their values and navigate through how they think folks should be. And there's no discussion that I don't feel comfortable or a part of or seen or heard because I didn't spend this weekend vacationing, or I didn't vacation on a plane when I was young, or I didn't have vacations. Like I worked, or we took care of ourselves during the summer because my family or people who took care of me was something that we talk about, which is the assumption that we are all from at least middle class.
Yes. And again, all that shame. And so the shame of empowering, amplifying, healing, and still universities, colleges, I gave you this money, therefore you owe me. And it just hit me. I'm sure you talk about this, but the whole idea of reparations because of having universities built with enslaved labor, I wonder if there's a parallel of universities coming to terms with how they have been so classist and perpetuated classism, capitalism, and harmful, destructive global and national ways. I don't know the word for it, but I've never thought of that before. Dr. Becky Martinez, Infinity Consulting. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Baird. We'll be back to Transformation Change Radio after this break. I can't wait.
Rocking that jazz music, aren't we? I don't know. What happened to the rap music, Benny?
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Thank you, Daddy.
I like it.
You're welcome. I'm going to play that in my car. Boy, I got to have me some fake something now. I'm telling you.
Get in the groove with Dr. Pat and her guests on Transformation Talk Radio. It's always something new around here. Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Consider follow through in 5 stages. First, the vision. Describe the goal and strategy. Second, feasibility. Find out if there are constraints. Third, planning. Lay out a plan and a timetable with target dates. Fourth, action. Do the steps required to get to the finish line. And fifth, completion. Tie up any loose ends. Most people are more comfortable with either planning or doing. Strong planners may hyper-focus on planning and never get to the action. Impatient doers jump straight into action, but can get derailed if they didn't plan for contingencies. Realizing your tendencies, you can determine where your follow-through falls short. Learn the strategies that will keep you on track in my podcast, ADHD Self-Mastery, Customized Strategies for Your Unique Brain.
Being a mom is one of the most rewarding and challenging parts of life, and you are tired, I'm sure. But look, when you make time for personal development, you will show up better for your children. Alicia Lyons is the mom support coach, helping moms like you become the people they want their kids to look up to. Schedule your free consultation at alicialyons.com today. ALYSIALYONS.com.
Are you passionate about impacting social change or working towards anti-racism as a society? Are you willing to deconstruct your innermost thoughts, ideas, and beliefs about racism? Then Inflection Point Podcast, Cultivating Change from the Inside Out, is the show for you. Join Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter in open, honest, and deliberate conversations every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You're driven, and it totally shows. Your career is taking off. You're killing it in the mom game. But did your health needs make it on the plate this week? Tune in to Boss Up Bigs, where Carissa Atkins helps babes show up, boss up, and thrive. Every second and fourth Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Become the boss babe you were meant to be. To sign up for one of Carissa's group coaching programs, visit 365dailyhustle.com.
Dr. Becky Martinez, we don't have enough time. I'm loving the conversation. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. We left beginning to talk about how folks that don't have a middle class plus are coming to universities, colleges, and it's just like not fitting in but forced to. Could you say more about either what the experience is, what I'm particularly also interested in, because I was swimming and perpetuating middle class plus academia culture that actually keeps classism in place and the damage and the harm we cause when we do that. So anything in there that gets your attention?
Yeah, there's a few things. One, I talk about the notion of office hours and how that is folks from or working class background explain what office hours is because and the value of them, because oftentimes it is we don't seek out help or support. You just like put your head down and get your work done and you're hard working and you figure it out. And so even the notion of office hours, right? So academia has some setups that are great support systems, but we get lost in the jargon or assumption that people know what they are and don't explain them well enough. Office hours. Let's talk about what those mean and, what the value is. Another dynamic that exists in academia, and I've learned it more and I'm recognized it in a more clear way, is I grew up, and many people grew up in poor working class settings or poor and or working class settings that, like, you're direct. You just say the thing. There's not all the feelings associated. You don't hate each other at the end of it or, like, feel a certain way. And you cannot be direct and say stuff in academia, right? That's why I think we say, well, let's be intentional and strategic. Let's set up this committee. And that is really challenging for some folks who are like, why do we have to talk about this for a year and a half when we can just do the thing? Or we could just say the thing and then figure out how to do the thing. But, like, that's not what you're supposed to do because that's not playing by the rules and that's not nice and you can't be direct and people feel a certain way about that. And so as the consultant, I'm able to see it more clearly, and it's thus frustrating. And I hear that all the time. I mean, we hear that all the time. Like, how many damn meetings do you have to make this decision? But you want to make sure that everybody is happy enough and they're okay enough with it and that it makes strategic sense. So let's do another assessment. And that I see a lot of folks challenged by this academic or systems approach to making decisions. And it's in such a different value system than lots of other places. It's just this thing in higher ed. Because, you know, I think when we work with nonprofits, that isn't as prevalent or less than I do. And definitely, it's not what you're doing when you're at the Home Depot working. Say, like, hey, here's the thing. And there's all kinds of class in that because you're being directed and told what to do. And I get that. Man, it's just like, just get it done.
Well, if I hear you, status quo. All that you just said are such great resistance strategies to keep the classist, racist, like status quo in place, to not have senior leaders, next level, maybe the next labor, feathers ruffled. And y'all are just here to serve us because that's what poor and working class people should be doing, is serving us with our class privilege. Ugh.
Deep breath on those ones, right? And, you know, similarly to how I see race play itself out, if we have, you know, white leaders in upper administration positions, is that, like, then you got to talk about how you really show up. And so, right, these upper-level positions come with all kinds of privilege around class. So you've got to, like, talk about how you really show up, and that could be from how much you get paid to where your office is, to where your parking spot is, to the fact that people come up to you and want to talk to you and maybe want something from you. And, like, you got to be grounded to have that conversation. And that is really difficult, just as it is for white people to, like, talk about that. It's difficult for somebody who earns $200,000 as a VP to talk about that in, like, ways that are responsible and, like, what's my responsibility as a, and I know that I'm not going to be able to give entry-level folks a $10,000 raise. Right, so, like, now you're talking about some, like, factors that impact folks' lives, and, I think of, like, how do people shift whiteness? Like, how do people shift class? Does that mean I give up some of my salary? Like, there's a direct tangible then. And what does that mean?
And
that means that maybe I can't, right? That means I can't afford this house, or I can't send my kid to the college that they want to go to without being in debt, or I have to change an insurance plan. And those are, like, some heavy things to talk about.
We just finished watching Dope Sick. I think it's on.
I haven't watched it.
Oh, can't remember what it's on. Opioid crisis, Sackler family, classism. So disgusting. And as much as I know about Appalachia, really helped me see some of the current dynamics of classism. They intentionally focused on West Virginia, Kentucky, Maine, maybe a couple others. So mostly folk of color, working class, coal, and to watch all the similar dynamics of I'm going to get mine. And so the folks that were fighting against the Sacklers would get bought out. And so they were with the FDA or wherever they were. And it's like, don't push too much and then we'll hire you at, you know, $300,000-$400,000. And so I just wonder how many folks who move into those upper echelons of $200,000 plus, relationship with legislatures, corporations, see themselves on boards. And that is so seductive for folks who grew up with class privilege. And I wonder if it's even more seductive, or at least very, for folks that didn't. And I could be wrong, but that fear of sliding back, or, as I've learned with you and some of our other friends, it's not just me. It's like I got an extended family that I'm supporting. And so it's just such a complex web for folk.
So complex. and, you know, class can really be disguised for, and that probably would probably more from an upward mobility, what do you have kind of space. Because people can be driving certain things, but they could be in a ton of debt or they could be taking care of it. But there's the assumption, right? So as I do more work around social class, there's three ways in which it exists. And I always say, like, in my body, there's three ways that class exists and for everybody else. So there's your class of origin, you know, so how you grew up, what you had, but what also your, like, value system was, and you know, what you think of the hard work and rest, which isn't part of part of our narrative at all. And then you have your current class. So that's, you know, the capital. So I always say I'm middle class, like I'm middle class from an economic capital, maybe middle class, like upper middle class. And I'm probably upper class and other people's capital. Linguistic, academic, social, cultural, at least when it comes to higher ed. If I were going to, like, corporate world, that wouldn't be the same. But in academia, I'm clearly, like, maybe low upper with those different forms of capital. And then you have your perceived class. And so how you are perceived and then what people put on you. And you're navigating we're navigating that all of the time, whether we need it or not. Right? And what are we playing into or not? What are we pushing back or not? And then you have an institution with 3,000 people, and then you're trying to, you know, navigate all of that. So it's a lot. Like you said, the complexity and the complication of that. And I like me a good steakhouse and some friendly way. And so it is, what is in my means? What is too much? How do I contribute in other ways? What do I support? But also the question, I think, especially as a consultant, and so this is where salaried is different than what we do, is like health insurance and retirement and just in case of a pandemic that happens and we don't know what's going to happen. So there's like all of these pieces to class so this is what I can make, or, you know, and I don't have the same trajectory of retirement that people who get retirement from their organizations have, or at least most, not everybody.
Or had some inheritance when elders passed on. There's two more things I'd love to get to.
Okay, let's get to it.
And this is a new thought. Are there ways that Academy needs to change that are really grounded in the poor and working class ways of being? What do we need to shift to, we got these strategic plans. You know, you said directness and self-care, you inferred that wasn't necessarily a part of how you grew up, but I know you so are talking about healing and self-care now. Are there other ways of being that just may not be literally on the screen of folks in academia who have class privilege in all those three areas you described? Mm-hmm. What are some ways out? What are some ways to dismantle, recreate, liberation?
Mm-hmm. You know, So my dear colleague and friend and co-author, Dr. Sponja Arbonne, we talk about YOSO's community cultural welfare model, because there's not yet a model to, like, a development theory or a model to support working class, like, poor and working class students.
Wow.
Yeah. Yet. Not yet. Yeah. So we'll put yet in the universe. And so just like other marginalized identities, we borrow. And this particular model talks about, it was written for, at that time, Hispanic students in college to reframe. And so oftentimes our models and marginalized identities are from deficit models and flips the script to talk about asset-based. And so what are we bring, like, what are poor and working class people, whether that's students or faculty, staff, administrators, and that's the class of origin, bringing to campus that is a value and an asset rather than a deficit. So, yeah, there's some language and some jargon that we need to understand. And, like, we're bringing, like, resistant capital to space, right, or navigational capital, so knowing how to navigate outside of higher ed to get into higher ed, whether that's the job or the admissions as an undergraduate student. So how are we looking at the various forms of capital as a value or an asset coming into the academy? And I think that I really appreciate that reframe rather than a deficit. I was just last week talking with cabinet at a very elite liberal arts college in the Northeast. And what is the Northeast called again?
The whitest part of the country? Is that what you meant?
Oh, it was pretty white. But, like, so I show this screen of words, so like a Wordle, a word cloud of terms that I have gathered in my own experience or through sessions, and I have people react to it. And one of the words there is options. And the university president was like, I can't not talk about options. It's my responsibility. I said, absolutely, it's a responsibility. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't use any of this language that's out there. And I want us to pay attention to language and terms that are out there that are fast, options being one of those. And it was a lovely conversation that we had for her to talk about options in a more clear way around class. And even being able to coach faculty or staff or students of, because what we often say is, here is what you need, right? As opposed to, what do you think you need? And here are options. And then you choose. And, you know, so from a system space, you know, here are all of the options that exist. We're not going to tell you how to be or what to do or what you need to do next. And here is the reality of those options. But we don't do that. We coach from a upward mobility, so the myth that everybody goes and enters higher ed to seek better, bullshit, and that, you know, everybody wants to make more money. It's like, no, maybe it's about going back to the community. Maybe it is about having a different status. But the way that the structure is developed is that that's what it is. In fact, and I don't know the intricacies to this, but she had shared with me that the next round of college rankings, I assume for liberal arts, is that her realm is going to be based on social mobility, but mainly, right, like where students, what students do afterwards is going to be how they're ranked.
Yeah.
Which is all kinds of just, I mean, it's just, further that gets us into class spaces. It's like, oh. So if people want to become, go into business or corporate, right, or lawyers, right, or engineers or money makers, they're going to get a higher ranking than if somebody wants to go into nonprofit organizing or education, and that's going to be the lesser rank. And I know that that's already a part of the structure, but for that to be I think that that was implicit, but for that to be so explicit now is just gross negligence. And that's what we can do in those higher ed institutions, like cabinet members, people with positional power, say no. Right? Like, talk about that. Talk about what that means. But then they've got alumni and donors and students that they want to attract their families, or they've got legacies. And so if we want to flip the script, let's have that conversation, leaders that know that that's not okay.
Love it. And legislatures, because it's career ready. I see it in community colleges, 4-year, and the states that give money to places that say there's more success. You know, minor thing could be senior leaders say, I want a parallel on competencies. Here are the 21st century that all people need to have when they graduate. Measure us on that. If you won't change this, at least add all these leadership, community, social justice, equity. So I'm learning so much with you, Dr. Betcha Martinez, as I do every time we talk, especially when you give me clear, direct feedback. That's part of our friendship as well. So here's my wonder. I've been working, you know, dismantling racism in the classroom, hiring practices, workplaces, creating inclusive. I haven't, except tangentially, brought in class. How could people learn and then be a part of dismantling classism in the classroom, in advising, in hiring practices? I'm not even talking tenure yet, but that would be another one of those systemic performance management. Just work climate and teams. In our few minutes we have left, what are some thoughts of what is possible?
Well, the first part is you gotta, like, know that it exists. And so similar to how I've learned from you, Jamie, and Vernon, is you gotta be able to do your own work. So, like, enter it through not only what information do I know, which is important, but, like, how does class exist in my consciousness of how I operate? And that could be how I feel, right, and what I talk about, but also leading to, how do we not do spirit days with the expectation that people buy their own clothes for that? Or that if you don't go to the happy hour or potluck after hours, it's maybe that you have a second job or that you need rest because you're so exhausted. And we don't, you know, we don't really talk about rest like a intentional care practice in academia because we're about production. So even like, how do we look at what our expectations are around production? And how do we coach like our senior leaders around that? Because that's what we do. I mean, I get the end result of the degree, but like how we get there is a whole different phase. And how do we, like, we are not machines, and our institutions are built like machinery of humans, especially if you think about a class space. And so what we need to do is, again, enter at the individual. What do I know? What's my information? What's been my experience? How do I mean myself? How do we talk about it? How do we train around it? I mean, in the Straddling Class book, that's some of the implications were, like, people would just want folks to start talking about it because we don't even do that. So we can't go to system change if we can't even recognize, like, what is in the room. And then we can, like, be more clear on, like, policies and practices. And my experience is we're just in the infancy stage. Around like noticing, I don't even think we're naming yet right now, we're just noticing and getting some information.
And maybe talking, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Talking to people we feel safe with, kind of like how race was talked about, but white folks never really, so really getting it centered in the conversation. So I'm imagining strategic plan implementations, dismantling racism, classism, other forms of oppression, creating true liberation, but then leaders have to know why. I heard this last week. There's the great resignation. Someone said they heard the great reassessment.
Ooh,
isn't that nice? The great reassessment. I think they said as individuals are reassessing, do I want to work in this toxic, exploitive, capitalistic, classist, racist work environment anymore? Do I want to do something else? Is there any place better? I challenge folks to think that systems, organizations, we need to do a reassessment. How do we attract, retain, develop, promote folks that truly can live into the dream that we have of true liberation, strategic plan, equity, inclusion, and to have class and classism centered with race? Because that's my only other fear is white people listening will be like, oh, good, now I don't have to talk about race and drop it off. So I hope white folks, if you're hearing, that's not what we're doing, and you heard me, like, put them both in there. How do we keep race-centered while also talking about classism? Because this country, as you know,
listeners, I'm hoping you realize, was really built on the intersection of classism, exploitation, racism, genocide, manifest destiny, colonization. We could keep going. So not either or, as Dr. Becky Martinez says, embracing the both and. As we close, any final thoughts, and how can folks find you?
Yeah, so ask yourself, what's my class story, and delve into that. Talk about it at a meeting. Bring some consciousness and awareness that isn't just from a theoretical or model framework, because that's where I entered this work, is knowledge, which is really critical. I didn't want to get into the what it meant to me personally, because there was such pain there. And as I think about healing my class story, that's probably why I've done so much work around class. And it's so meaningful to me. So meaningful. And I just, like, pay attention so that you can then be more clear of how you show up and what your policies are and your practices are. But, like, healing work is necessary in class spaces, and allow ourselves grace and rest to do it. Allow yourself grace and rest to do it. Grace and rest. Right? And joy. I need joy in my life. So, listeners, get some joy. Work your shit and joy. It can hold both of those at the same time. You can contact me at my email is BeckyMartinez1@gmail.com. I would feel some kind of way about that because it's one, and I'm like, that's the next one that was available. And at Dr. Becky Martinez for Twitter and Instagram, and then Infinity Martinez Consulting. So that's how it's right. And then I have some publications, mostly around class, and I hope to have more.
You will. As I'm hearing you, I'm just reminded that cross-race conversations, the beginning, white folk were not able to show up effective, and we needed parallel space, white accountability groups, BIPOC, healing space, empowerment space, naming the truth space, and folk of color were probably much more ready to come together than whites were. So I think it might be something similar. Healing space for folks who've experienced classism still are. Maybe some space just for straddlers, because that might be a different experience. And clearly, I'm feeling more energy about creating, holding space for folks in our privileged identities on class, and really looking at how we perpetuate, similar to what I do with white folks. Thank you for helping me find some energy. Dr. Becky Martinez, my friend, my colleague, my teacher, be gentle, be fierce is so you. I love you dearly, and I'm so grateful for you and the world. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, friend. I'm sending you lots of love across the screen.
If you've been following me, he's been on several times. You don't want to miss the Reverend Doctor. You all have a great, great healing month. Take good care.
Take care.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change. Motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. A little bit of sunshine peeking throughout there. Hopefully it'll be around for some of the day today. It may not be in other areas. However, taking a look at the traffic situation, 405 northbound is moderate to slow by the Newcastle area and Southeast 64th Street. But everywhere else, traffic's actually looking pretty good. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Stay tuned, coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's Transmutation Time with Kelly Kay. Energetic alchemy for an amazing life.
ABC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. President Biden is updating the nation on his administration's work to address issues plaguing the U.S. Speaking at the White House, Biden urged Americans to get vaccinated against COVID-19 amid the discovery of the Omicron variant. Biden said retail issues shouldn't be a problem for the holiday season after speeding up production at ports. He said Americans don't have to take his word for it, as some major CEOs he's met with this week assured him their shelves are stocked. He was scheduled to speak earlier this week on supply chain concerns. Officials say the cancellation was due to Biden wanting time to meet with business leaders visiting the White House. Mississippi Solicitor General is arguing there's no inherent constitutional right to end a human life. While at the Supreme Court today, a representative from the Center of Reproductive Rights insisted the Mississippi abortion law is flatly unconstitutional under decades of precedent and imposes a disproportionate impact on poor women. Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan warned about the Supreme Court entering the stormy political waters of abortion.
To prevent people from thinking that this court is a political institution that will go back and forth depending on what part of the public yells loudest.
Mississippi state law bans nearly all abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Stocks are up today after a wild last few trading sessions. December trading is off to a positive note, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 400 points at times. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 are in the green as well. Police in Austin, Texas say a high school campus will remain on lockdown due to reports of a gunman, but no shots have been fired. The chief of the Austin School District Police said on social media, students and staff at Aikens Early College High School are safe. The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree will be lit up for the first time tonight during a nationally televised ceremony. The 79-foot-tall Norway spruce has been decorated with more than 50,000 LED lights and topped with a Swarovski crystal star. The tree will be lit daily now through New Year's Eve. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
For $1 a day, if any covered appliance breaks in your home, we guarantee to fix or replace it. All makes and models, washers, dryers, refrigerators, air conditioners, and more. Guaranteed to be fixed or replaced for $1 a day. Call the Home Service Club now for free information.
800-823-6836. 800-823-6836. 800-823-6836. That's 800-823-6836.
I must go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather. Outlook for Wednesday, we'll see mostly cloudy skies and rain at times today. High temperatures around 56, 57 degrees. We'll also have a little bit of wind out of the south to southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour, gusting up to 30 in selected areas. For tonight, rain likely, low temperatures dropping down to about 46. For Thursday, starting things out with clouds and rain, moving to partly sunny skies by Thursday afternoon. High temperatures around 49. Thursday night, though, mostly cloudy skies, lows back down to about 38. Friday, mostly cloudy skies and a few sunbreaks. Highs up around 45.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Transmutation time, energetic alchemy for an amazing life. Your past can stick with you, and most of the time it's subconscious. You don't even know that it's happening. Let Kelly Kay and Dr. Pat help bring your shadow into the light so you can begin to truly heal and grow. You have the power to shift your energetic ties to the past and thereby shift your life. Stop being stuck in your karmic patterns and transmute your pain or unhealthy ways of being into wisdom and joy. Are you ready to live a more conscious life, to act instead of react, to be present and balanced even in the face of challenges? It's time to turn trauma into transcendence. Transmutation time, energetic alchemy for an amazing life, and Kelly Kay starts now.
Wow. I welcome everybody. Welcome. This is Transmutation Time with Kelly Kay, and I am her MC, so to speak, for the show. I'm Dr. Pat. You just heard in Kelly's voice talk a little bit about this, but what you don't know, and this is what's so exciting for me about what I get to do, is I get to meet people like Kelly who helps other people go through rapid changes, levels of awareness, and what's happening on the planet, and be able to move through it physically, emotionally, spiritually, address all the challenges that show up in life, and do this because she has built up a very large toolkit to do it. And so her show is appropriately named Transmutation Time, because she is a master at looking at energy and creating this energetic alchemy so that we can create an amazing life. And for all of you, this energetic alchemy goes back thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years. But we have become so industrialized that we often forget. Today, taking us on a journey about this. What is our energy field? What is it? How do we utilize it to heal? And healing is a pathway and a portal for manifestation. Wow. This is a great show, Kelly, yeah?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Pat. I'm so excited to talk about it because I can say, yes, I'm an energy healer, right? I work with energetic alchemy, but what exactly does it mean? It's a really common question that I get. Well, what is our energy field and why should people care about it, right? It seems like something that might be woo-woo or out there, but to me, it is just as scientific as anything else that is being studied. And it's one of the reasons I love, you know, quantum physics and string theory and some of these physics notions that are, you know, very provable. And they say, yes, we have energetic fields, right, that extend around our body. They certainly have already measured some, for example, that are around our heart when it beats. It has an electrical charge. Every heartbeat, that's an electrical current, right, that runs through your heart. That creates a field. Your brain, when it's thinking, when you're, you know, that's creating an energetic field. So they're found all over your body. And like you said, you know, thousands of years ago already, this was being documented by people that had that extra sense that they didn't need the scientific instruments to measure it. They could feel it with their hands, you know, with their third eye intuition. And they created maps, so to speak, of energy pathways along our bodies. So I'm an acupuncturist as well. There's a meridian system where it's like rivers that run along our body, for example. And then when they gather, there's acupuncture points, and it's like a well or a spring where there's a lot of chi, a lot of energy that gather. And then chakras is another really well-known one, right, that's talked about a lot. And what does that mean? A chakra is, it's like an energetic whirlpool that we can utilize to gain access to what is happening in your field now, what has happened to you in the past, and it's a gateway for healing. And I'll say, I did not expect to be able to feel energy and chi. When I first became an acupuncturist, that was not something that, you know, I was trying to do. I was approaching it from a very medical standpoint, and I realized when I worked on people, as I was, you know, palpating along their energy meridians in their body, I could feel where it was stuck. It would feel very sticky, very heavy. I could feel where it was depleted. It would feel, you know, like a hole that I would kind of sink into. And so for me, it was surprising, actually, how real and how palpable energy is when we just take the time and the training to get to know to sense it.
You know what I find fascinating, the more that we discover about ancient ways, and you're right, it is well documented. It may not be documented like we write in English now, but it's documented in hieroglyphics and pictures. And if you go to Peru or you go to any country that still has artifacts up and well and alive, I mean, we talk about Egypt, but across the world, there are these, there's this documentation, and they talk about things that would indicate that these were tools used to save people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you read about it. You can talk to somebody that's describing a story and talking about oils and talking about energy, or they don't use the word energy, but they show diagrams of almost like these rays coming from their hands, right?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
You and I are talking about energy, but if we were doing a story in a hieroglyph, you know, there would be something that's done with that. I want to ask you this question because I find this fascinating now, where we fast forward to where we are and the introduction of technology. And I remember going to my first spiritual convention, so to speak, like a show. And I remember my friend says, go over there and get your aura done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty new to all of this. This has been a life lesson for me. And I was shocked by how technology now has been able to capture things,
mm-hmm.
right, about us in ways that it hasn't before. And I thought, very skeptical me, I'm like, you know what, the dude just pushes a color and that's what comes up. It amuses me.
Right.
But isn't it fascinating now that people in energy and energy medicine, and once upon a time, talk about this for us, saying the word chakra, people be like, what?
Oh, exactly. I mean, I was even that way. You know, when I started acupuncture school, like I said, I mean, I had a classmate that brought crystals to class, and I said, what is this person doing? You know, bringing crystals. We're working with a medicine here, and, you know, now I have a house full of crystals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just goes to show you how when your consciousness changes, you can start to see things, you know, in a whole new light. But absolutely, for a long time, it was very woo-woo, very out there. Some people, you know, wondered if it went against their religion or things like that. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell people this is not a religious thing. To me, it's actually the physics of how we exist in consciousness in a body. And when we can start to access that, it's a healing process. So anyone, any spiritual belief can, you know, utilize this. It's not a religion. It's a healing art.
You know, I want you to talk about this in results because let's talk about what you do or what people have done to really clear things. Now, the reason I'm saying this is Linda, who you know, you've met Linda. She's mm-hmm. our producer. Linda had a cough for about a year. Like coughing, like couldn't stop coughing. If she talked to you, she was coughing. If she was eating, she couldn't eat. And I said, you got to stop this. And this is before we even met you. And I said, we got to go see Mary Jane because she's going to do some stuff. That's my description of it. But what happened that day? And I have pictures that Linda will not let me. But you're about to describe the work you did with a woman to clear her throat. And you're a skeptic until you watch somebody work.
Absolutely.
And they're coughing in minute number 11 and in minute number 15. They have not, and they haven't coughed since. I can't explain it. Can you explain it for us? And what you've seen and what you've helped people with, because you help people with this all the time.
Absolutely. And that's my favorite thing to treat, actually, is the mysterious, like, why is it going away on its own? You know, they've already taken the antibiotics and they've seen this doctor and that thing, and yet it's still persisting.
Yep.
That, to me, is almost a guaranteed sign that there's something energetically holding on. And sometimes we can ask questions to get a feel for what it is. For example, the lung, the cough, it's often grief that's unreleased and it can be trapped in the lung. Nothing that was in her case. There can be, you know, other reasons too. But there are some places in the body that you start to learn, like, oh, this holds on to this. And, yeah, I have an example of a woman that I worked with where she was in a toxic relationship. She got out of it, thankfully, but still energetically, the person she was with made her feel like she had no voice. You know, she wasn't able to speak up for herself. She wasn't able to make decisions for herself. And energetically, when I looked in her field, I could see it almost like an energetic color. And it was so interesting because she would always complain of neck pain. And, you know, I was seeing her in person as well, and we would do acupuncture and all these other techniques. And, you know, it would make slight improvements on the pain, but it was stubborn. I was like, why isn't this pain going away? So finally, you know, she kind of let me do more of the shamanic energy side of it, and immediately it became clear. This is the source of the pain. As soon as we removed that energetic block, the pain started to get better. So to me, that is enough evidence to show that this is real and that this works for people.
And, you know, part of this, too, is when we're talking about energy, and we're going to talk about this when we come back from break more, we're going to talk about how our past could, in your words, linger, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we think that we're done with it, or we tell ourselves we're done with it. But there are signs, just the way you've described, there are signs of things that linger. And you also help people go through whatever that is they need to go through so that they can transmute that. See, that's what I love about your show name, Transmutation Time, is because transmutation is you're taking and you're starting out with some representation of a thing. And then there's a process that happens, and it comes out as something else. You have firewood, and you put the firewood down, and you light a match to it. It becomes fire. And then within hours, it's smoke. That is the power of what we're talking about. That is a transmutation energy. When we come back, I got to ask you guys this question. Do you have anything in your past that is lingering? How do you know it is? And by the way, call in, ask Kelly yourself, 1-800-930-2819. We're going to take a short break. Benny, Jacob, Olivia, we'll be right back.
To wait until the new year to set new goals for yourself. Hi, I'm Joan Marlowe, the host of Awareness to Action, and I'm taking this concept to a whole new level. I've developed a program to take your awareness to action in 90 days. Let me introduce you to your day one. Day one can start any day you choose, so why not now? We will use powerful brainstorming, mastermind, visioning, and goal-setting techniques to open your awareness of what you really want in your life and take action with intention to get there. Choose to work with me one-on-one or in a small group. Let's connect, lift each other up, and hold each other accountable. I'm offering a free consult to design your program. Visit my site, peacefulhealing.com, to connect with me, and let's find out when your day one will begin.
Are you wondering who you are meant to be in this ever-changing world right now? Kelly Kay is a certified New Paradigm Multidimensional Transformation Energy Healer, ready to assist you in this transformative process of expanding your consciousness. She helps you transmute your wounds and traumas into healing, growth, and wisdom, resulting in self-empowerment and freedom from fear. Visit enlightenedmedicine.com to learn more.
Do you have traits of ADD or ADHD? It can be hard to meet society's expectations of productivity when traditional approaches to time management and organization don't work for your unique brain. You need customized strategies. In the ADHD Self-Mastery Podcast with Bonnie Minku, you get concise, actionable solutions to help you modify your approach and achieve your goals. Learn more about Bonnie at thrivewithADD.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Courtney Cottrell, host of Unapologetically Favorite on Transformation Talk Radio, here to give you some tips on how you can move your life forward if you're feeling stuck by using the GROW model. First, use the letter G to write down the goal that you ultimately want to achieve, whether it's working out 1 hour a day or working towards a promotion at work. Second, using the letter R, think realistically about the roadblock that is currently holding you back from accomplishing your goals. Third, use the letter O. Think about the options or opportunities that will help you in achieving your goal. What can you change in your daily routine that will help you move closer to achieving your goal? Fourth, use the letter W to discover your will and make a true commitment to achieving your goal by writing down a completion date. Once you've reached your goal, celebrate your accomplishment. You are capable of achieving anything you set your mind to. Never give up and keep being unapologetically you.
So how do you value your self-worth? Join Dr. Pat and Sabrina Wright as they introduce Sabrina's holistic approach to self-care and inner peace. Get empowered to make decisions for yourself. Change your view of your own values and learn the tools for investing in who you're designed to be. Live the good life every second Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific on the Dr. Pat Show featuring Sabrina Wright. To learn more, visit SabrinaIsWRIGHT.com.
You know, let's just talk for a minute about this question. Please think about this, everybody. How does your past linger? And how does it linger in your subconscious mind and in your energy field? But you may not even know it's lingering. You may not have a sense of it. That's why Kelly Kay is going to talk with us about what that even looks like and feels like. But before we do, Kelly, I really would love for you to tell people more about you. Tell them about Enlightened Medicine. Tell them about all of this, all this work that you do, that I could take the whole hour and not have enough time to tell people everything you do. But please, how do people find out more about you?
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot about me is on my website, enlightenedmedicine.com, and it does go through the various trainings that I have, because you're right, you know, I've done a lot, because to me, the more tools I have to help people really reach the root of what's going on, the better. And as I mentioned, you know, I started in acupuncture school thinking it was, okay, this is a medicine, and then as I'm working on people, realizing, oh, this is so much more than I realized that was going on. And so I started learning about chakras and energy, not because I necessarily wanted to be a shaman or an energy healer or anything like that, but because I almost felt like it was my duty, you know, to understand what was really coming up for people as my intuition started opening. And, you know, I'll say as well, it was something that I didn't expect, and I remember one of the first times I was working on a patient. I was still in school, in acupuncture school, and, you know, doing some acupuncture points, and all of a sudden, it felt like an electric shock. Like, it zapped me, and it zapped her, and I didn't know what was happening necessarily. I just knew something had happened, and, you know, I had to leave the room because my heart was beating fast, and I was kind of like, what was that? And I had an assistant with me who was, like, earlier on in school, and I said, go check on her. She's okay, but I need to step out of the room and breathe for a second here. And, you know, after I calmed down and the patient, you know, like, took a deep breath, and I came back in, and I said, do you know what that was about? And she acknowledged that, you know, when I touched that spot, it released something that had been held energetically in her for a very long time. And so, you know, for me, it started to feel like, well, I better understand this, right? For my patient's sake, for my sake, know what is really happening here. So that's what got me interested in energy work. Honestly, at the beginning, it was a form of how do I, you know, protect my own energy? How do I create a safe energetic space for my patient? And then the more I worked with it and the more I practiced with it, I just kept, you know, deepening, realizing that there's layers and layers to chakras, for example, to the way that energy can get stored in the body. And then the last piece I added on was the shamanic piece, because, again, I could tell how sometimes psychologically we hide things from ourselves. We convince ourselves that, you know, we're over it, or that we've forgiven someone, or that what happened wasn't that big of a deal. But the energy field tells a different story. And so that's where it's really nice to have a guide or someone that is trained in this to help see past the mind's way of kind of saying, no, no, it's okay, you know, this isn't affecting me anymore. And a good energy healer or shamanic healer will be able to kind of see past that surface level and say, actually, this is still kind of sticking in your field, and it might be causing you issues that you don't realize, and they can be vague, and that's why it's hard for maybe you to know that you necessarily have something stuck in your energy field, right? Because it could be, well, I'm more tired than I would like to be, or, you know, I get triggered into anger more easily than I'd like, things like that that are not necessarily concrete. But as you work on healing these things, that's one of the main things people tell me is like, oh, I just feel like things that used to really aggravate me, you know, stress me out or send me into an anxious or angry state, it's like they start to roll off, you know, and they don't affect anymore, which is really nice.
Yeah. And, you know, part of this too is, let's just talk, if you and I could, for a minute, on why this is important. I too have gotten that shock, right? And I remember one time just crying.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it didn't hurt. So I wasn't crying, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
But it was jolting. And I think that I was feeling something, some kind of relief. It was fascinating. But because you do holistic approaches, you're able to recognize when that's happening, but then you're able to work with people to really get underneath what that is, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to a meridian point. You're able to say to people, what are you feeling now, right?
Exactly. So it's a combination, and that's where the shamanic work really comes in, to be able to check in with people. Okay, what are you feeling as we're, you know, exploring this? What emotions are coming up? What's happening in your body? There is a connection, right, between, you know, how things get stored that way. And most importantly, a shamanic journey, it allows things to come up from your subconscious in a way that is safer than reliving trauma. I work with a lot of people that have had difficult things happen in their life, you know, various kinds of trauma or abuse or toxic relationships and things like that. And that's a difficult thing to sometimes, you know, look at directly because it's painful, you know, and you don't want to necessarily remember or relive that trauma. And so a shamanic journey brings the energy up of what, you know, maybe any pain that's still buried from that, but it can be cleared away in a way that you're not having to, like, confront that memory directly. So, for example, on a shamanic journey, it might appear as an animal, and we can work energetically with that animal to help that energy to transmute. It might appear as, you know, a forest, that at first the forest is really dark and scary, and we do energy work to bring in light, to clear out, you know, the trees that are rotting or causing problems. So a lot of it is metaphorical, but energetically it's very palpable and very real. And again, it allows what's stored there to be cleared away without having to re-traumatize or relive something that, you know, that might just be more painful than necessary to have to go into that memory directly, you know?
Yeah. I want to ask you this question, too. Not only are you doing this particular work with people, but sometimes it may lead you down a pathway that you didn't expect to go down. And what do I even mean by that? So basically what I'm saying is that it provides an opening, doesn't it? And then that opening allows for a deeper and deeper and deeper healing. And I know we're going to talk more about that when we come back from break. But we can show up, Kelly, right, as we could show up as a neck pain or a knee pain, right, or a throat pain, right? But we don't know that my knee pain is like from a past relationship. And isn't that really, you know, the work that you do to transmute that, right, to go like, oh, this is pain, and then we discover what it is. And then, voila, we're on our pathway to not having that pain. Now, I've oversimplified it, but isn't that what you've seen happen in your practice as well?
Definitely. And sometimes it is, you know, a very, like, palpable or visual cord, for example, that I'll see connecting between someone's, like, stomach and they're having, like you said, stomach pain, digestive problems, and then I look in their energy field and I can see this energetic cord connecting, you know, to someone in their past or to someone in their family that they're having a really difficult dynamic with. And you're right, they never would have connected it necessarily that, oh, my stomach pain is due to someone that, you know, I had a relationship with 5 years ago. It wouldn't necessarily come to mind, but energetically it becomes obvious in various ways. Or another way that the energy can present itself is through a really strong emotional reaction. So sometimes when I'm working in someone's energetic field, I'll say, you know, I feel a deep sadness like lingering over your shoulder here. You know, do you tend to get shoulder pain? And I won't necessarily know right away what the sadness is from, but as we talk about it more and we dive into it, like you said, a doorway opens and all of a sudden, you know, they'll feel where that sadness was coming from. And often, I mean, it can be something from 10, 20 years ago that they had totally forgotten about. So it's really interesting how when we give permission to start exploring it, so much can come up for healing.
And, you know, we're going to talk about that when we come back. We actually have a caller calling into the show, which would be great. Before we go to break, would you just mention again how people can find out more about you? And you got a really cool class coming up.
Yeah.
It really is cool. Tell us about it.
I'm excited about it. So I've studied sacred geometry. Is fascinating to me because when I look in people's energy fields, to me, their energy field appears as a lot of beautiful geometric shapes, and bringing those shapes exactly into alignment often makes people, you know, just feel better instantly. And so the class I'm teaching is an introduction to what are these sacred geometries, why do they matter, how can you visualize them and use them for your own healing and spiritual expansion. So that's happening in February, and it's over Zoom, so anyone, you know, anywhere can attend. And there's more information on my website, enlightenedmedicine.com, if you're interested in that.
Well, that would be exciting, and people can find out more about that. They can also find out how to work with you. I am fascinated by it, because maybe you'll tell me why, since a very young age, I had to have a triangle of some kind on me. Just didn't have to be like, you know, like a fancy dancy like we had now. But if it looked like a triangle, right, and all my uncles would give me like triangle things, never understood it, never knew why, and they just said, leave her alone. She could be asking for a Mercedes. Give her the triangle. Let's take the short break. When we come back, we're going to go right to the phones. We have a fabulous listener waiting to chat with you, Venetra. And when we come back with Kelly Kay, I'm Dr. Pat. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Consciousness unfold in each show. You won't want to miss a second of this. Make sure to tune in to Transmutation Time, Energetic Alchemy for an Amazing Life, every month with Kelly Kay on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about Kelly and the show, visit www.enlightenedmedicine.com. You have the power to turn trauma into transcendence. Come bring your shadow into the light so you can begin to truly heal and grow today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Pat. I'm the host of the Dr. Pat Show. Hey, look, some of us are outwardly successful, but inwardly feel unhappy and living a life lacking in purpose and meaning. Well, The Necktie and the Jaguar by Carl Greer can help you discover what's important to you and how to reach out and go for it. For more information or to purchase the book, go to TransformationTalkRadio.com or go to CarlGreer.com.
Want to ignite your best life full of joy, passion, and purpose? Then join me, Stephanie James, for The Spark, Wednesday night, 6 o'clock Pacific Time, 9 o'clock Eastern,
on TransformationTalkRadio.com and learn how together we can illuminate the world. Learn more on StephanieJames.World. The best is yet to come.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. It's out of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I get to do this fabulous show. I'm telling you, I love being a student. And, man, when I meet somebody like Kelly Kay and I think about transmutation time and I think about all the work she's doing and how this energetic alchemy helped the many different piece parts for us to create an amazing life, because you cannot create an amazing life if you're stuck.
Right.
Half the time you don't know you're stuck. And I do want to mention, one of you, you just texted me. I'm sorry. I'm going to do it slower. The event we're talking about with sacred geometry and the patterns that you use for healing that Kelly Kay is doing, it's about that. She's teaching that. It's in February. And if you're interested in this, there are a couple ways to do it. And Benny knows I talk so fast. You can go to Enlighten Medicine. That's enlightenmedicine.com. Or you can email Kelly at enlightenmedicine.com. Go to the website. There's so much there, but you can find out more about this course and register and sign up. How fun is that? That's why I was showing you this picture, because I'm going to do a whole show on it, because I didn't realize how symmetrical it was, and it's all freehand, right?
Yes.
But there's an energy that I was talking about, and I want to talk with you about this in a minute. But we're going to talk next about trauma. But before we do, we've got one of our fabulous listeners. They want to check in with us, Kelly Kay, Dr. Pat.
Unfortunately, our caller has dropped. We wish them back. So she was calling in from Canada, and it was Vinitra.
Yeah, Vinitra, call us back. I want to just hit this up really straight between the eyes. When trauma hits us, it does something. Tell us what trauma does to our energy field, to our aura, to our chakras.
Mm-hmm.
What does it do? Because not everybody can see it. You can see it.
Right, absolutely.
Okay.
And I want to be clear, too. Again, trauma can mean anything from the serious trauma of abuse and some of the really difficult things people have been through. But sometimes it can be a day that you were a child and your mom forgot that you were at ballet class and forgot to pick you up on time and you felt stranded. And, you know, maybe it was before cell phones and you had no way to call anyone, right? And you're wondering, what happened to my mother and why isn't she here? So anything that causes fear in us is what I call a trauma. And it can do so many different things to our energy field. And basically, it destabilizes, it weakens our field and our chi. And sometimes the natural kind of energetic walls that we're supposed to have for protection around ourselves, they get thinner, they get weaker. What happens when that happens? We are maybe overly sensitive to what's going on around us, other people's, you know, words get in our head and we feel like, you know, too hypersensitive. That can be a sign that their energetic, you know, shield has maybe gotten a little bit weaker from these traumas. If it's a severe trauma, we can even have a little piece of our soul kind of like split off and say, no, I don't want to, you know, participate in this right now. Basically, I'm going to go protect myself over here so that I don't have to be so present for this trauma, which is a safety protective mechanism at the time. But if it's not energetically called back,
it can kind of stay out there. And again, there's a feeling of not maybe being as focused or as, you know, as present as we would like to be. And that's when we do what's called a soul retrieval, to find those pieces that are hanging out there and say, you know what, it's time to come back. And to do that, though, we sometimes do have to do a fair amount of energetic work first to have the field be in a nice, harmonized place to even say, yeah, it's safe to come back. It has to feel safe to come back, right, that fragmented piece. And so there's a lot of different layers to what can happen here. But basically, the takeaway is if you've been through something really emotionally challenging where it generated a lot of fear, reestablishing your field, it's going to help you feel safe, help you feel grounded in your life again, have more energy again, feel more, like, motivated and a sense of, like, oh, yeah, I know what I can bring to this world. If our energy field, you know, has holes in it or gaps or these pieces that are kind of frozen out in time, we often feel like we just don't have the focus or that we don't have the energy to go out and do what we want to do.
You know, it's so interesting you're bringing this up. I'd love for you to talk about this, and I know we didn't prepare to talk exactly about this, but I think that for me personally, I'm starting to see the impact of the past 24 months. And it starts out like the frog in the cold water, and then you turn it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not like the frog, and you throw the frog in the hot water, and it hops out. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because, you know, I have a group of about 30 or 40 women, and every year up until COVID, we would get together for White Elephant, and then we would go to Sleeping Lady for a long weekend. And now 2 years, the fear and the notions and the beliefs are just immobilizing people. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have concerns. That's not what I'm saying. So y'all that are getting ready to email me, trust me. This past week, I lost two people to COVID, so I'm very aware of it. But there's something else happening energetically that have caused people to carry more fear, anxiety, and anger than this body is equipped.
Yes, I agree 100%. I also feel like it is maybe forcing people to look at underlying fears or anxieties that may have been there for years, decades, but we were just too busy going through our normal routine. And then the pandemic was like a forced stop, you know, that was like, wait, you're not going to be as busy and as social and travel as much. And we were forced to kind of sit in our own stuff. And for a lot of people, a lot came up, stuff around, you know, is this current relationship really working for me? Is my job really working for me? What is my relationship with my children like right now? You know, and there is a lot of collective fear going on, not just with COVID, with the economy, with, right, just so much that any energetic support we can have right now to bring us to a place of center. Because again, like you said, it's not about being reckless, but if we can approach difficult life circumstances with a centeredness instead of a reactionary fear-based panic, we're going to do a lot better for ourselves. But if we have a lot of these accumulated traumas in our energy field, our tendency is for, you know, it to escalate into an anxiety, into a panic. And so the more we can do to clear that out, we're just going to feel better equipped to handle, you know, whatever happens next in this very unknown situation.
Yeah, and, you know, part of this is to really get at the point that you're making, and I think we'll go ahead and skip the next break because I want to really tie this together, is I want to be able to talk about trauma, what it does to our field, what it does to our auras, but also how do we get back to feeling the energy ourselves? And the reason I say get back is because, look, I know we know it. I really do. I know that we know when something's off. We may not say, oh, my energy's off. We may not say that. but we know when something's off. We even say things like, Kelly, something's off, right? How many times have people said to you, you know, something's off, right?
Exactly. Or, yeah, that phrase, I feel off-center, or I feel ungrounded, right? All these terms in the English language, really what people are saying is, yeah, there's something off with my energy. And, you know, to your point, too, of there's been, for whatever reason, I've known a lot of people that have lost someone recently. So I'm sorry for your loss, by the way. And whether it's COVID or other related issues, you know, grieving can be a trauma too. So I just want to bring that up as well, that, you know, if you have lost someone, there's a lot energetically to process just there, you know. And so I feel like almost anyone can benefit from energetic work. And whether, you know, we say, oh, we're fine, events like this leave an imprint. So, you know, I just want to point that out, that there's often an event in our life at some point that happens that we just need a little energetic support to get through. But in terms of you feeling the energy ourselves, I think that's important too, because at the beginning, a lot of people, it's maybe they're skeptical, like you were at first, like I was at first. And when you feel it, you're more likely to believe it. And I believe that anyone can actually feel the energy field around our body if we take enough time and concentration to practice. So I'd love to guide us through, you know, a quick few-minute exercise here where we allow people to start to feel the own, you know, feel your own energy yourself. And obviously, if you're driving, you might want to do this later. But if you're at home and you're somewhere that you can have your hands free, I like to use the hands as a way to really, you know, palpably feel it kinesthetically. So let's do that now, okay? All right. So if you have your hands free, like I said, allow your hands to start maybe, you know, 4 or 5 inches apart. And you can kind of gently bounce them like this. And as you bounce them closer and further apart, if you do it really slowly, there's no rush here, you may notice that as they come closer together, there's a little bit of like a resistance. And then as they move further apart, it's almost like it's smoother. It's easier for the hands to go apart than it is for them to push in. And as they push in, you may reach a point where it feels like there's this bouncing place where it wants to stop and not go any closer together with your hands. And that is your chi or your prana or energy or whatever word you want to use. And so at first, it can take practice. You know, if you're not feeling it necessarily immediately, then allow yourself to continue to practice with it. But the more you practice, the more you'll get a sense that you can also work with the energy. It's not a static thing. And this is what, you know, energy work is. This is what transmutation is. It's saying energy doesn't have to stay stuck. It can grow and it can expand. And so you can take your energy ball and you can make it bigger and brighter. And so we can fill it with the intention of this energy ball now contains, you know, bright optimism. It contains whatever you need in your life right now. Maybe you need more joy. Maybe you need that optimistic hope. Maybe you need just more energy to do the things you need to do. Whatever that is, fill your energy ball with that. And some people are visual, and it can be a color. It can be, you know, yellow or gold. If you need more love, it can be a beautiful pink color. Whatever it is that you feel that you need, and let it glow brighter and bigger. And again, if you're sensitive, you may even feel the edges of that energy ball getting wider as you do this. And when it feels like it's about as big and bright as you can make it, you can actually put it into any of your chakras and just like absorb the energy back into your body. So if it was empowerment energy, it can go into your like solar plexus here, and it can brighten. The solar plexus is your self-empowerment center, by the way. So if you're feeling like, oh, I need to feel more empowered and I need more motivation, bring that energy ball right into below the rib cage, the upper abdomen. If you're feeling like you need more love, more joy, it can go right into the heart chakra. And just let yourself absorb that energy with like a gratitude, thank you, and trust that it is so. And those that are sensitive, you can really feel that exercise work.
Mm. Wow. And if people want to know more about this, and see, this is when we run into this, Kelly, and thank you so much for that. What happens sometimes is we wonder, am I doing it right? Am I doing it perfectly?
Right.
Energy is a thing on its own.
It really is.
And it doesn't know right or wrong or this or that, does it?
Right.
But we do. The mind will get in and say, oh, I just didn't do it as well as Kelly did it. That's not really the truth. I mean,
absolutely.
Every motion of this is the motion of it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about the self-doubt, because, like I said, I really believe anyone with enough practice can learn how to feel that. So don't be discouraged if you're like, well, I'm not sure if I'm really feeling it, you know, as much as I expected to. The more you just, like, get used to paying attention, you know, the extra level of sensitivity. I teach workshops where by the end of it, you know, most people can feel it, but maybe not right away. We practice for 2 days straight. And the doubts are really common. A lot of people, you know, at first, am I doing it right? Or, you know, what if I do it wrong? Will I mess up my energy field or something like that? You know, and I have to tell them, like, no, you're working with the energy of the universe, the energy of source. There is no wrong way to do it, right? As long as you have good intention that this is meant to be something healing for yourself, that's the point. And so you can, you know, do whatever you want with that energy, even if you just want to observe it to start it. But mostly, you know, I want people to get that confirmation that, to me, this is not something that's just woo-woo and out there or just for the hippies. You know, to me, this is, it is a practical healing modality, and it is palpable, and it is real. So that's one of the main things I want all the listeners to really know about this medicine.
You know, one of the things I was struck by, I was on your site earlier, and I was looking at one of the services that you provide, and I was really struck by the way you present it. So what you say is new paradigm, multidimensional transformation energy healing. That's really powerful, because here's what it says to me. I'm sitting over here in this paradigm, and this paradigm is this thing that's going to have all of the beliefs that are really sticking me, but I'm sitting here. And no matter what I do, I cannot get to a new paradigm. And 9 times out of 10, it's hard for people to do that, one, without energy healing, without getting underneath at what is really adding cement to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when I think about multidimensional, Einstein said it better than anybody. Basically, you cannot solve the problem at the level it was created.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't, and so, and, you know, I mean, if he were here today, he'd be right in the conversation. I would bet money he'd be right in this conversation, because this would totally fit what he was trying to say to people. What do you think, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a perfect quote, because you're right. It is hard to get unstuck when you're seeing it from, you know, the same level all the time. And so when you're able to, like, raise up and go into a different dimensional way of seeing things, it's like you become like the hawk, right? And all of a sudden, or the eagle, that now you're flying and you're looking down at the problem from a whole different perspective, and all of a sudden it becomes really obvious. It's like, oh, why didn't I see that before? But it's because, how can you? You know, if you're like down in the ground in the trenches, you know, and you're only seeing a tiny fraction of whatever obstacle or whatever block is in your way. And to me, energy work and shifting into a different paradigm it's giving you that energy to lift you up. And then you look down at the obstacle, and you can see the path around it, right, so clearly. And it's like, oh, gosh, why didn't I see that before? So, and it's amazing. Then you don't have to be down the obstacle, right? You don't have to, like, take a hammer and try to chisel it away, which takes years of effort. It's like you get these shortcuts become more apparent that, like, oh, yeah, there's an easier way for me to be and to heal and to grow. And it can happen. I mean, that's transmutation, right? It can happen like that instead of, you know, wailing away at the boulder that you think is the only way through that obstacle. And then you're frustrated and you're tired because the boulder is taking forever to dissolve. Good energy work, good transmutation energy work, it shows you the path around. And it's a beautiful thing.
I love it. You know, there's so much that you're talking about and we'll continue to talk about, but in the end, you know, what we're learning now is that we have to really get at the root of what is holding us. How do we move beyond whatever is sticking us, whether it's fear, whether it's anxiety, you know, whether it's sadness, whether it's grief. I mean, whatever that energy is, right, it has the ability to transmutate, right? Sweet. And that's what I think people are so hungry for right now. They want to know, look, I don't know how to do it, but Kelly, can you give me some relief, right?
Absolutely. And what is so beautiful about transmutation, too, is that it is an opportunity to work through things, you know, faster. That bird's eye perspective allows you to go through many different challenges, obstacles, blocks, whatever word you want to use, in a way that, you know, before maybe it would have taken years. But it's like we don't have time anymore. You know, our society is at a point where everybody's stuff is coming up to the surface right now, it feels like. So we don't have decades, you know, to work through all of our things. It's like, no, let's take this opportunity to do this now. And to me, this is one of the best ways that we can do it.
I agree. Kelly, thank you so much for today. I want to ask you your personal message, what do you want to leave us with, but also please remind us how people can work with you directly and how they can, you know, stay on top of the courses you're teaching and all of the other things that you're doing.
Yeah, please visit my website, enlightenmedicine.com, and you can also email me. It's Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, at enlightenmedicine.com. And email is one of the best ways if you want to schedule with me or if you're interested in the classes or want to register for the classes or workshops or things like that. Just shoot me an email, you know, and I'm happy to explain what I offer and if it's a good fit for you. And the main message takeaway here is that, to me, consciousness is energy. Everything around us is energy. And when we can really know that, it's a beautiful thing because energy moves. And so anything that we think in our life is, you know, it's stuck or it's hard or it's a big block, it's not. If we look at it through the eyes of energy, energy is always moving around. It's changing. And when we can work with that, you know, our whole world around us can change and we can change. So thank you.
Kelly Kay, everybody. You've been listening to Transmutation Time. The work that Kelly does is described beautifully on her website. And for all of you out there, just know this from us. Whatever it is that you've experienced, whatever you've gone through, this doesn't have to be your future. There is ways that you can transmute it, that you can change it, you feel, and that you can live an amazing life. And Kelly Kay just to introduce you to a small part of what she does.
Thank you for listening to Kelly Kay and Dr. Pat on Transmutation Time, energetic alchemy for an amazing life. Showing up to life in a healed present way is the best gift we can give ourselves. Healing creates smoother family dynamics, better professional opportunities, and an easier time in romantic relationships. So what are we waiting for? Learn more Kelly and what she does by visiting enlightenmedicine.com. Don't forget to...